listeners and viewers. This is Ron Stefanski, host of Disrupt Ed, where we get a chance to talk to the disruptors out there, those people leading the way for us to better understand this ginormously disrupted world of work and education. How disrupted? I'm talking about a 5G wired workforce, augmented technology, interconnected, globally interdependent, AI accelerated, Industry 4.0 advanced, pandemic interrupted world of learning and work. And we have a gargantuan talent on the show for today that you're going to really enjoy listening to. A dear friend of mine for quite a while. He's a lifelong career trainer for many people, and he's out with a new book, How to Find Work. And this is Dr. Chaz Austin. Welcome to Disrupt Ed, Dr. Chaz.
Hi, Ron. That was great. How are you?
Good. Fantastic. So I want to bring our viewers up to date, and I hope I'm not telling tales out of school, but since the last time we spoke, you've had quite an adventure of an extraordinary sort, not necessarily a good one. And subsequent to our doing our last show together, you developed cancer, and yes, you've been fighting cancer for the last 12 months, but you look terrific. I got to say, you look terrific.
Well, I'm in Hollywood, and that's all that counts, that you look good.
Right.
No, I was diagnosed with salivary gland cancer, which is a rather rare form, came out of nowhere, had no family history of it. And it was five chemo treatments and 35 radiation treatments, and I'm cancer free. It was hell. It was hell. It was awful. But that happened, and now we move forward.
Amazing. And it's amazing that in the course of doing that, you were able to publish your book, How to Find Work. So I kind of want to start us there. We talked about lifelong career building in our last episode, but I want to bring us forward a year and talk about what's happened in the meantime. And you've uncovered a lot of insights that you put in this book that you haven't shared previously. So let's start there. What's the key thrust of How to Find Work? What did you write the book for? And what are you hoping to accomplish with it?
The book is for anyone at any age in any field. In doing this work for about 20 years, it's been fascinating to realize it's the same conversation, whether you're just getting out of high school, whether you're 84 years old, and I've worked with people of 84 who want to re-career, as it's called, and start something new. It's the same conversation, which is, to me, remarkable. That basically you have to have a sense of that you're a brand, what that brand is, and who are the people who would benefit from your skill set in that particular field. How can you help others make money or save money in whatever enterprise they're involved with? The bottom line of it all is that you're providing a service to people in your industry, and they need what you got. So your focus is on their needs rather than your own.
Makes a lot of sense. But, you know, it occurs to me that a lot of young, you've been working with a lot of young people over the years.
Oh, yeah.
And it occurs to me that for many of them, they're more than a bit distraught. I mean, we see mental health, diagnoses on the rise. We see increased incidence of anxiety and depression. And some of that has to be, I'm guessing, that is a very distraught time to kind of figure out not only what do I want to be doing now, but what do I want to be doing as a career? And also then layer in the disruption around education. It's not a clear pathway anymore. When you and I were coming of age, it was really evident what we needed to do, get as much education as we could, and then get a ticket to the job line and take it from there in a fairly linear progression. Yep. That's not the case anymore. And I'd like you to expound on that a little bit.
It's really tough if you're young. And I feel for these folks. They've been clients and students and hundreds of them over the years. Your point's well taken. There's not that clear path. Used to be get a good education, create a good resume, learn how to dress and behave at an interview, get a job and stay with the company. But companies, the loyalty that was there is not there anymore. So you are essentially forced to be entrepreneurial. So for us older folks, let's say, this is extremely disruptive. for younger people, they're used to having three jobs and 10 roommates because they can't afford the rent because housing costs are so high, and having debt from their education as well. Really tough trying to dig out from under that and have what we had, which was one person in the family working and a home and two-car garage, and that was normal. The middle class has been gutted, and these folks are having to face that, and it's tough, but they are used to it. They're used to doing three jobs. They're used to changing things. They're used to working remotely. They've adapted quite well, and for them, they really aren't looking so much as, gee, it used to be this way. I wish I had it. They're grounded in the reality of how it is and how it will be for a while. And the concept of career, the way we think of it, I don't think is the same for them, because they are used to moving around and doing different things after a few years. For us, that was like, oh my God, I was supposed to stay with this company until I retired at 65. And for them, now I'm bored, I'm going to do something else. I'm going to move somewhere else. I'm going to learn a new program. I'm going to work remotely. I will make this work.
So many of them are more open to the fact that their career trajectory is going to be somewhat fluid and somewhat flexible. So when you think about it and engage with folks about their career prospects, what do you think is the most important skill that when you start with them, they don't have, and you make sure they have an abundance by the time they leave your fold?
It's their communication skills. We've spent so much time, or they've spent so much time in front of this, that their skills in dealing with other people are atrophied. And it's teaching them how to talk to people, how to listen to other people, and how to focus on what other people need. And that's a bit of a challenge. They are underdeveloped in that area. So that's the first thing, is learning how to talk to people, learning how to listen to your clients and give them what they want. It's not about you. You don't get a vote, really. It's about, how can I be of service to you, madam or sir?
Right.
Yeah.
So as you're working with them on their communication skills, it seems to me the irony is that, everyone has flocked to technology, to social media, to creating a brand. But really, Chaz, doesn't it come down to being an authentic human being that's really the coin of the realm now, where people are recognizing, wow, I may know how to communicate on social media, I may know how to communicate what my brand is, but I've got to be human in the interactions that I have with others if I'm really going to move along. Is that a fair statement?
That, dead on. That's how it works. That's what's going to matter in the future. I don't care. I'm a huge user of social media. I have over 35,000 followers on LinkedIn. Okay. It ain't the same. It ain't the same as being in face-to-face with people if you possibly can. I know we're doing more and more remote work, but face-to-face with people and having them learn to trust you so that they will hire you again to do similar kind of work, or
right.
Yes, that's what's critical, is to gain their trust. That doesn't happen on social media. I'm sorry. If we're friends on social media, we're not friends on social media. Okay. We're connected on social media. It's like giving someone a business card at a conference doesn't make them your best buddy. It's a start.
Right. Right. But it is an interesting start. And it's one I'm going to harken back to our first encounter. We both connected on LinkedIn. That's how we initially became acquainted with each other. And then you reached out to me and said, hey, want to have a virtual cup of coffee? I just want to find out what you're doing and hear about what and share with you what I'm doing. No agenda other than that. And, I have found that formula is a formula for success in amplifying what you're trying to do on social media. So you and I both have brands on social media. The Disrupted brand is now powered by over 25,000 followers on LinkedIn and 100,000 followers on social. So there's an audience that's listening to this that finds value in this. But at the same time, you know, where it started for, where it advanced for me, and it was kind of around the time you and I connected in that particular way, that I was thinking to myself, my friends, my close college friends that keep me honest, you know, keep me grounded, they started teasing me about the fact that I have this huge following, because they were at the age where they were moving out of the workforce, and they couldn't imagine having to manage an audience of tens of thousands of people. And they're like, oh, really? Are those really your friends? And so the challenge for me became, okay, I cannot be personally connected and in touch with, you know, 25,000 people, but I can make an intentional effort to reach out more. And I think your invitation for a virtual coffee was classic. I mean, it was epic, because I use that now. And I can honestly tell you, Chaz, that was over a year and a half ago when we first did that. And I can tell you, in the time that I've done it, I do, you know, three or four every couple of weeks. And of all the people that I've connected with in that way, every one of them was someone that I should have been connected with all along.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they weren't necessarily someone who I was going to do business with, or I was going to have on the show, or I was going to talk to, but their perspectives, their outlook, you know, and that's really how I chose, you know, a small segment of people out of a lot of people that are, you know, connecting with me, is I looked at their profiles and said, is this a person I should be, you know, I'd want to have coffee with if they lived in town? I ought to just ring them up and see if they want to do that. And so I thank you for that, that exercise in introducing ourselves to each other, because now we've stayed very connected and we're constantly commenting on each other's posts and content and trying to stay current. And that's a consequence of using the technology to do something which we do more instinctively, which is connect as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you marry the two of those, that's a powerful combination. And I think one of the reasons, I'd like to hear more from you about it, but I think one of the reasons why that's so powerful and why it actually plays an important role is because we meet people who are way different than us on social media in a way that we don't do it in our own communities. Our communities are fairly homogenous, but when you go and introduce yourself online, you're meeting someone from, you know, Senegal, you're meeting someone from England, you're meeting someone from Croatia. Automatically, you're meeting someone that's had a, you know, has had an incredibly different lived experience. And so I'd like you to share a little bit about that, because you have a collection of friends and a network out there that is boundless. And you and I have talked about this quite a bit. I think your insights are really powerful about this.
Thank you. Oh, perfect example. You mentioned that I have been the chairman of the advisory committee for a company called Zubara Global Services based in Nigeria. Without the internet, I would never have connected with Promise Chizara, who is the CEO of the company. And the company's growing big time. They're working with the government. The government is giving them land to farm because it's all about agriculture, which I know zero about. Yes. You know, it's like I don't know where, I don't know the old line. I don't know where they harvest tacos. You know, I wish I did. But I've been a coach for him, a leadership coach, for the past 2 or 3 years, and he feels it's enormously valuable to him. That would never have happened without the internet. Now he'll be in the U.S. next year. He's meeting with someone at the University of Riverside. I connected with him, an agriculture professor who actually works in the same field that he does. And he's invited myself and my wife to come visit him in Nigeria and see what they're doing. I'm really proud of what they've done. And he feels that I'm in some way responsible for that. So wonderful.
Absolutely. I think
back to your point about connecting with someone one-on-one, whether it's through a Zoom call or actually in person, excuse me, it's what I call points of resonance. That's what I think, it's a term I created. What do we have in common? Who do we know in common? How can we help each other? The basis of all of it is trust. I'm not going to, nor are you going to hire someone cold. You have to develop a sense of trust with them, whether it's through a referral or through the one-on-one. And there's another the concept of good enough is good enough. So it, let's say I was one of your vendors, okay, and I come through and I deliver. You now trust me. You're going to hire me to do that again. And we've developed things we have in common. You know, let's say I grew up in Detroit. I'm a big Tigers fan. Whatever it happens to be, and I'm sorry about that they didn't make the playoffs, that Cleveland beat them.
And believe that? We were on a magical mystery tour to come out of nowhere in August.
I know.
And slam through the way we did. I'm really proud of the Tigers. I'm really proud of the Lions. I'm really proud that as Detroit has come back, so have our sports franchises.
Oh, yeah.
It's a wonderful thing.
There was a piece in the New York Times about how Detroit is really bouncing back. And I have a good friend of mine who grew up in Dearborn. So I share with her all the good things about Detroit. Because, I know that place. I used to hang out there. It's what you have in common. And that's what connects people, and they stay connected in that way. And then when they start working together and they're someone reliable, it continues because good enough is good enough. I may not be the best, let's say if we're that vendor idea, I may not be the best vendor, but I do the job. So you're not going to look around for an alternative. I have somebody who fixes my car, my wife's cars. I've referred three or four other people to him in Los Angeles. Is he the best mechanic in LA? I don't know and I don't care. He delivers for me. That's what matters. Yes. And then you get the repeat business.
Right. There's something else, though, about human interaction that I think we would do well to talk about. And that is the idea of the world at large. The world at large is in a state of chaos. It's in a state of disruption. We're seeing more change on a more granular and more explosive level than we have in our lifetime. And that's created a lot of friction, a lot of chaos, a lot of polarization. I think another reason to have these coffee clutches and to have these virtual interactions to support our connections to a larger community of people within our networks is because what they teach us, what we observe in interacting with new people from a different place, is a different perspective that we recognize in the course of human interaction can just sit there. I mean, years ago, if someone didn't agree with who you voted for president, you didn't unfriend them. You didn't isolate them. You didn't walk away from them. And I think social media has given us a certain trigger happy aspect to our relationships where we say, okay, I don't have to be with this person. And what we have to do is fight that urge, it seems to me. And I'm interested in your take on this, Chaz. I think we have to fight that urge because I think it's a dangerous place to be. If you live in a neighborhood where all the people you live with are the same as you, carry the same views, look at the world the same way, I don't think that's necessarily healthy. And I'll give you an example. I mean, my wife and I moved back. I'm a Detroiter, as you know, from birth, a very passionate one. And I had the opportunity with my wife as an empty nester to consider moving back here 12 years ago. And we did, and we never looked back. It's been an amazing experience to move down here. Among other things that is really, truly amazing is that I'm a minority for the first time in my life. I'm a white privileged dude, right, who's living in a community that's 81% African-American. And so I've been able to, when we lived in Ann Arbor, we moved there because it was a very enlightened community. But I couldn't honestly say that after 30 years there, I had a very diverse group of friends. In Detroit, I do. In Detroit, I just have to look in my building, and we have so many interesting, diverse people from very different experiences. And God, is it fun? It's just fun learning. You know, I think at our age and stage, Chaz, help me out here, but it just seems that our appetite for learning is only increased because other things are not, in the front of us. And so we can look a little around us and say, wow, that's just fascinating. I want to learn more about that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very true of human interactions and helping people along the way.
One of the things to push off Alzheimer's that they've studied is that you want to start challenging yourself with something that you haven't done before that involves your brain. That's what keeps you young, so to speak. So, for example, my wife and I, we've been studying salsa dancing. And she's really good at it. For me, my brain doesn't connect to my feet right away. So we have a wonderful teacher. He says, does it make sense after he shows us a move? I say, yeah, it makes sense here. It doesn't make sense down there. So it takes me a while to learn that. But that's one of the challenging things that I've started doing. And I get great joy from it. Yeah.
You know, to our listening and viewing audience, you've been listening to Dr. Chaz Austin, an amazing individual, one who I've really, really gleefully adopted as a friend a couple of years ago, and we've had on the show several times. I'm not done with you, Dr. Chaz. I want to continue this conversation. To our listening and viewing audience, stay disrupted with us. Stay engaged. We'll be back in a second with episode 2. We've got more to ask Dr. Chaz here. Okay? Come back to us.